There are key areas of Title IX, and one certainly was athletics and the regulations. There's a specific set of regulations that govern athletics, making sure that there is equal access and equal opportunity, equal facilities, things like that. Certainly access to higher education was an issue, and access to education. You know, we still have issues in the STEM fields, also in employment. When we look at the numbers of women in engineering, women in science, those are huge areas, and Title IX covers those. The learning environment, there are cases talking about overcoming gender stereotypes for things like that, standardized testing, and certainly sexual harassment is an issue.
And Title IX's underpinnings really come from the Civil Rights Act, which in itself kind of lit a fire under the women's rights movement.
That's correct. The Civil Rights Act of 1964, Title IX was an amendment to that, the education amendments. And so Title IX specifically applies to institutions that receive federal financial assistance. There are other titles. For example, Title VII in 1964 did include a provision to prevent sex discrimination.
Yeah, we hear about Title IX. We don't hear about the other titles so much.
Yeah. Well, in my world, I worked a lot in Title VII in terms of employment discrimination. So that's something that has evolved and taken it sort of a different path.
What do you say to those who believe Title IX wrecks programs like men's basketball in favor of women's field hockey? You know, and I've just made that example up. Do they have a point or not?
I don't think so, and I think the courts have held not. It's really to equal the playing field. It's not intended, and I believe there's guidance, although some schools have eliminated a men's football program in some other circuits, and I'm familiar with those cases. But the intent, and certainly the way we do it here at the university, is to equal the playing field in terms of making sure that we provide equal opportunities for both men and women if there's an interest. So some statistics that were actually pulled together by one of the wonderful law students who works in our office sometimes. In 1976, in the Montreal Olympics, U.S. women's teams brought back 18 medals. In 2012, in London, U.S. women's teams brought back 61 medals. In 1976, the U.S. women won 3 gold medals. In London in 2012, the U.S. women brought back 31 gold medals. I think that's a huge success. It's my personal opinion. I think we can attribute a lot of that to the opportunities that women have had all through the system in the United States after Title IX.
I wonder if the impacts of that go beyond sport, if that translates somehow into economic success, personal success stories.
And I can just speculate because I'm certainly not an expert in that. But anecdotally, I think that that's the case, certainly in terms of what I've read. If girls have the same opportunities in K-12, in sports, in testing procedures, in not being stereotyped and not being told that they can't do math, there's going to be a higher rate of success that translates through grades to employment.
We've talked a lot about sports. We generally do when it comes to Title IX. How has it affected students otherwise, other aspects of their education, pregnant students, single parents, things like that?
There are provisions in Title IX and certainly in the guidance that make sure that, again, educational institutions receiving federal funding are not discriminating. It used to be, and that was a problem, and as you mentioned, K-12 also, certainly in high schools where pregnant students needed to drop out, and that's not permitted under Title IX. Same at the university. There can't be discrimination because somebody's pregnant, because somebody's a single mother or father, for that matter.
And this brings us to the Department of Justice and the Office of Civil Rights investigation, and that agreement includes many provisions here at the University of Montana.
Correct. And I can go back. The Department of Education Office for Civil Rights, beginning in 1997, actually provided guidance to institutions that receive federal funding, specifically with regard to sexual harassment and how the regulations applied. And those were amended in 2001, that guidance. And then there were 2 Supreme Court cases where students filed lawsuits against school boards, and this is in K-12 schools, where they were alleging that they were sexually harassed. The first one, the Gebser case, was by a teacher, and then the Davis case was peer-on-peer sexual harassment. And the Supreme Court established legal standards for receiving monetary damages. The Department of Education in the 2001 guidance in response to that clarified that institutions receiving federal funds have an obligation to follow the regulations, which are intended to proactively make sure that institutions are responding to allegations of sexual harassment amongst peers and making sure that the educational environment doesn't become hostile, and clarify that we don't need to meet the damage standards for somebody to receive monetary damages. And then, and this goes to your question, and I'm sorry, it's a long answer. So then in 2011, the Dear Colleague letter came out. That was additional guidance from the Department of Education Office for Civil Rights. And that Dear Colleague letter addressed sexual violence on campuses. And what our agreement with the Department of Education and the Department of Justice, if you look at our agreement and look at the guidance in the Dear Colleague letter, pretty much mirrors what the Dear Colleague letter said, the guidance that the Department of Education is providing to all institutions. If a school reasonably should know that there's student-on-student sexual harassment, it needs to take proactive steps, immediately investigate the situation, conduct a fair and impartial investigation. It clarified that institutions need to be using a preponderance of the evidence standard, the lowest standard of proof, in investigating the situations, because it's a form of discrimination. Do this in a reasonably prompt time frame. Make sure that institutions have clear policies and procedures, and then provide notice to students of how to access the grievance procedure and how to report situations in which they feel they've been harassed.
Other things, enhanced training, professional development for employees, the PETSA, as it's called, training for students as
Correct.
Well.
And the Dear Colleague letter, again, discusses those things, all the proactive things that we should be doing to make sure that we're proactively making sure that we provide an equal educational opportunity for everybody. In the Dear Colleague letter, the Department of Education started with some statistics, and I can quote some of the language, some of the prefatory language. The statistics on sexual violence are both deeply troubling and a call for action to the nation. A report prepared for the National Institute of Justice found that about 1 in 5 women are victims of completed or attempted sexual assault while in college. The report also found that approximately 6.1% of males were victims of completed or attempted sexual assault during college. And that's what really prompted the Department of Education to provide this guidance to say, institutions, you need to be proactively addressing these issues.
And as you know, Ms. France, there are people who wonder if UM is creating a new definition of sexual harassment, a new definition that goes too far, unconstitutionally far, to really show that UM is trying to satisfy Title IX requirements. Do they have a point, do you think, or not?
No, I don't believe so. We're not creating any new definition. The policies that we are adopting encourage people to report concerns they have, and then that goes to a trained Title IX coordinator or a trained investigator to look to see whether that constitutes a policy violation, which certainly has to meet the definition of one of the definitions of sexual harassment that's consistent with the law as it's evolved through regulations as well as court cases.
Mm. When do you think we'll start to see the payoff from all this effort to improve the situation, or is there any way to know that?
There is, and actually part of the agreement requires that we monitor and we look and we track cases and we look to see whether, and then do climate surveys to look to see whether students are more aware of how to report. And it's a little counterintuitive, but if we receive more reports, I think we're seeing a success. Then more students are coming forward and saying, this is conduct that needs to be stopped, and then we can take efforts as an institution to address those problems.
DOJ referred to Montana as a blueprint for reform on this issue. And your office made a statement that's posted on the UM website. I don't know if taking umbrage is the right way to phrase it, but it says, I hear, quote, the university isn't interested in being a blueprint for any group's agenda. What did you mean by that?
I think the University of Montana wants to comply with the law, make sure that we provide an educational environment where everybody can thrive, males, females, non-traditional students, traditional students, you know, every gender and sexual orientation. And I think lots of institutions are looking to do that as well. I don't know that we need to be held out as anything but doing that. These are complicated issues and really difficult issues. And if there was one way to do it, we would be doing that. We would have done it a long time ago. Yeah. We're figuring out what works best for our students and our campus community.
What do you think the biggest challenge is that lies ahead for Title IX, not just here at the University of Montana, but nationally?
That's a good question. I think there are lots of challenges, and it takes work. I mean, when we look at statistics, we look at pay inequity. When we look at the statistics in terms of the STEM fields, the science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, there are still challenges to make sure when a lot of the jobs are in those fields that we are educating women at the same rate as men to take those jobs that are available. So those sorts of challenges. I think we certainly have challenges in the sexual harassment realm that we just discussed. I think we're taking strides to move forward. I hope so.
UM Legal Counsel Lucy France, thanks a lot for coming in.
You're welcome.